Hi, welcome to Al-Muqaddima, my name is Siavish. I recently watched Useful Charts' video on the coronation of King Charles III, which I highly recommend, by the way. The animator did a great job. He talked about some of the artifacts used in the coronation and how old they are, and that made me think about how ascension and coronation in the Islamic world were done throughout the past 14 centuries. From the simple ascensions of the Rashidun caliphs to the lavish ceremonies of the Ottomans. So, without further ado, let's get to it. This video is brought to you by, well, you guys. Thanks to my patrons for supporting the channel and making these videos possible. Al-Muqaddima is funded only by Patreon, and as you can see, the videos take a long time to research, edit, and produce. And it's only because of my patrons that I am able to put this kind of time into these videos and keep them free from any kind of paywall. So if you want to pledge a dollar or more to support the channel, you can head over to my Patreon. Link is in the description. You can also become a member right here on YouTube. There's some cool stuff that comes with it. Back to the video. The term bayah is often translated as pledge or oath of allegiance. That makes it seem like it is a one-sided promise of support between two unequal parties. However, that's not the case. Bayah should more accurately be understood as an exchange of oaths between two equals. One of them was a first among equals, but they were equal nonetheless. It was a transaction, and that's certainly how the Quran paints it. In fact, it comes from the same root as ba, the Arabic word meaning to sell. In a way, it's quite similar to an oath of fealty in many parts of medieval Europe. However, oaths of fealty were mostly a tool of feudalism, whereas the bayah can be said to have been a tool of piety. Its simple nature connects it to the overall themes of simplicity and humility that Islam promoted for rulers. It was no pompous and lavish ceremony like the ones conducted by the Romans or the Persians before Islam. The bayah begins with Prophet Muhammad himself. We find mentions of many people who exchanged bayah with the Prophet, and exchanged is an accurate term here. When someone exchanged the bayah with the Prophet, it meant that they would behave in certain manners and avoid certain things. In exchange, the Prophet, and by extension God, promised salvation and rewards in this life and the next. In fact, the Quran states clearly that those who make bayah to the Prophet, in truth, make bayah with Allah himself. Bayah was the way that one joined the Muslim community, although the term Muslim was not in use yet. The way it was performed was by a handshake or a hand clasp. There was also seemingly an exchange of words, but not always. Everyone in the Prophet's presence who wanted to join his community had to perform the bayah. So in that way, it was an acknowledgement of the Prophet's spiritual authority, but also his secular authority. He was, after all, a secular leader as well as a spiritual prophet. We see, for example, before an impending battle, the Prophet took bayah from his followers, where they promised that they would win or they would die. They would not abandon him. This is the famous bayah of Ridwan. The Quran also mostly talks of the bayah in terms of conflict and assurance of fighting for the Prophet. Immediately after the death of the Prophet in 632, some members of his community exchanged bayah with Abu Bakr, a senior companion, choosing him as Khalifatul Rasulullah, the successor to the Prophet of Allah. This didn't guarantee Abu Bakr's ascension as the secular leader of the community. It just meant that those people who exchanged bayah with him were supporting him. Another group could have gone to someone else and exchanged bayah with them. In theory, neither party would be superior to the other. In other words, you didn't owe anything to any emir or khalifa until you exchanged bayah with them. Even then, that person became your khalifa or emir and not a universal one. However, after you exchanged bayah with someone, going back on it was seen as a very bad thing unless the khalifa or emir was very corrupt or didn't adhere to the Quran and the traditions of the Prophet. In the case of Abu Bakr, no militarized resistance occurred from within the community, and Abu Bakr became Khalifa, or in English, Caliph. There doesn't seem to have been any debate over the rituals involved in the ascension of the Caliph. The same ritual as the one used by the Prophet, a hand clasp accompanied by an exchange of words, is used here. This seems to indicate that the way that the bay'ah was performed was pre-Islamic, and the Prophet appropriated it for Islamic usage. It was probably well understood by the Arabs as being a gesture of secular authority or contract. Eventually, most of the followers of the Prophet met Abu Bakr and performed the bay'ah. This process took months as people arrived in the capital and rebellions were crushed and new allies were made. In this way, the collection of the bay'ahs is quite different from a coronation in the European sense. It was much more informal, at least till that point, and an ongoing process. It was largely performed in a public setting and was open to everyone. Abu Bakr made a speech in which he reaffirmed his promise to the community. Again, we see that the bay'ah was an exchange where the community offered him support in exchange for governance, according to the laws of the Quran and the Prophet's tradition. However, not everyone exchanged bay'ah with Abu Bakr. From then to 661, the bay'ah doesn't change much. Notable figures from around the caliphate came to the capital to exchange bay'ah with the new caliph. The first major break from the simple and informal process of ascension was the ascension of Muawiyah ibn Abu Sufyan in 661. We actually have both Muslim and Christian sources of what happened. Unfortunately, the chronology is still not clear, but he did have a ceremony at Jerusalem where he probably exchanged bay'ah with many leaders who came to join him. He made a speech in which he promised to rule justly in accordance with the Quran and the Prophet's tradition, etc. Then he went to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and Mary's tomb and prayed there. This could mean that either he was respecting the Christian traditions or he was placing himself as the new protector of Christianity, at least a secular one. Maybe it was some combination of the two. He seems to have had another ceremony in Damascus, his capital, as well. He also traveled to Iraq to exchange bay'ah with people there. The Umayyads, who ruled till 750, started the tradition of naming a son to be their successor. For this purpose, bay'ah was exchanged between the notable leaders from around the caliphate and the crown prince, who was known as Wali al-Ahd, or literally, the one with the contract. So the bay'ah was no longer the fountain from which authority is derived, as Anwar Chejne calls it, rather it just became a promise of support to the chosen heir and much less a contract. After all, princes didn't have to give speeches or make promises to collect bay'ahs. There was only one prince chosen by the caliph and everyone had to perform the bay'ah with him. This is quite different from how the Prophet declared his successor. Now, the Prophet's succession is contested and not everyone agrees on what it means, but for now, let's assume that the Prophet declared Ali, his cousin and son-in-law, to be his successor as the secular leader of the community. This is the position held by most Shias and quite a few Sunnis as well. So the Prophet held up the arm of Ali in a public gathering and declared, "He whose Mawla I am, Ali is his Mawla as well." The term Mawla has a lot of different meanings, from friend or ally to lord. The wording changes from source to source, the event as well, but no source mentions a bay'ah for Ali. The Prophet didn't ask anyone to exchange bay'ahs with his alleged successor. So either bay'ah wasn't for a secular leader or Ali wasn't his successor, or some other third reason that I don't want to get into. Here, let me say something about the upcoming coronation of King Charles III. He became king as soon as his mother, Queen Elizabeth II, died. The coronation is largely symbolic, as it has been throughout history. In much of medieval European history, a chosen heir would usually become monarch at the death of the previous one. He could be challenged and he might have to fight a war, but for that time, he was the king. In most cases, coronations were done to reinforce power and make a symbolic gesture of your power. However, in the Islamic world, you didn't become caliph upon your father's death. You had to secure the bay'ahs. Without them, your brothers or other family members could rush to collect them and push you out. A similar thing happened under the Abbasids when the great caliph Harun al-Rashid chose two of his sons as his heirs. His son, the future caliph al-Amin, was to be his heir, and then his other son, the future caliph al-Ma'mun, was to be his heir. He took his two sons around and collected bayas for them both. They both even went to the holy cities of Mecca and Medina, where they collected bayas and signed a document saying that they would respect the succession plan. However, al-Amin, after becoming caliph, pushed his brother out of succession and destroyed that document, and as a result, he lost significant support because he was going back on a bayah he had made while standing in Mecca. Ascension under the Abbasids changed quite a bit from the simple public bayah of the Prophet and earlier companions. Even the first Abbasid caliph, As-Saffah, ascended to the throne in a very simple way. He entered the great mosque of Kufa and people exchanged bayah with him there. Later on, from around 800 onward, there were two bayahs, one for the notables, known as Bayt al-Khasa, and one for the notable members of the public, known as Bayt al-Amma. This was a way of establishing power through restriction of access and reinforcement of social classes. Slowly, the bayah began to lose its value in practice. Abbasid power declined around the year 900 CE and they became puppets of various military commanders. It would happen that they would exchange bayas with the caliph one day and try to overthrow them the next. The legitimacy that the bayah provided to the caliph was replaced by two separate things. For the general public, instead of bayah and regular appearances of the caliph in the mosque, the Abbasids started using the khutbah. The khutbah is the sermon that is read before the Friday prayer. In Islam, theoretically, most men go to the mosque to pray on Friday. So you can imagine the immense propaganda power of the khutbah. The khutbah goes back to the Prophet, but its use as a political device seems to have been first exercised by Muawiyah. The Abbasids had the name of the caliph and the crown prince, or Wali al-Ahd, declared in the khutbah. This is how the public knew who was ruling them and when someone new came to power. In addition to them, others used the names as well. For the emirs or sultans, who were theoretically lower than the caliph, they chose to have the name of a caliph declared in the khutbah. This meant that the emir or sultan was lower than the caliph and was ruling on his behalf. Removing the name of the caliph meant declaring independence. In practical terms, the emirs and sultans were completely independent post-900, but removing the name meant that you didn't recognize the caliph to be a legitimate one. An interesting example of this is when Salahuddin Ayyubi, or as he's known in the West, Saladin, came to power in Egypt. He had the name of the Shia Fatimid caliph removed from the khutbah and had it replaced by the name of the Sunni Abbasid caliph. Technically, Saladin was the vizier of the Fatimids, and removing the name of the Fatimid caliph meant the official end of the Fatimids. The Fatimid caliph himself died a few days later. It's said that Saladin said to one of his associates that if he knew the caliph would die soon, he wouldn't have committed the cruelty of having his name removed. In response, the associate said, "If he knew you wouldn't remove his name from the khutbah, he wouldn't have died." So the khutbah was for the public. For the elites, there was the coronation. Now, the coronation of the Abbasids and other rulers, including the Ottomans, was quite a bit like what you expect when you hear the term coronation. It had some rituals, some prayers, etc. Just like the crown jewels of the UK, there were some items that were passed down from generation to generation and used in ceremonies. For example, when Harun al-Rashid died away from the capital in northern Iran, immediately, a messenger was dispatched to the capital with the news of his death, the insignia of royalty, the mantle of the Prophet, the scepter, and the caliph's seal. These were to be handed to the next Abbasid caliph, as they, it said, were the caliphate. We unfortunately don't have many details of how the Abbasids did the coronation, but it was likely not a very unusual ceremony with many rituals. We also don't know how these crown jewels were used for coronation. However, from the Abbasids to the Ottomans, everyone had some pieces of objects that they claimed were linked to the Prophet. This included robes, turbans, swords, etc. The Ottomans used them for coronation, so it's possible that the earlier Abbasids did that as well. A side note here. Crowns were not something that was very common in the Islamic world. Rulers mostly only wore turbans or headgears of some sort. They did wear jewelry and often wore robes laden with gold and precious stones, but crowns, like we see in Europe, weren't really a thing. Of the various Islamic empires, we know the most about the ascension of the Ottoman sultans. Over more than six centuries of Ottoman rule, a lot of changes occurred, but there were some common things. For example, ever since the first sultan, Osman, there was a sword involved that was girded around the new sultan. An artifact later used for this ceremony was the sword of Osman, claimed to be the original sword. For some of the medieval sultans, there was also a ceremonial firing of the cannons as the new sultan entered Constantinople. At least since Mehmed II, there was a site called the Ayub Sultan Mosque, which is said to have been the place where Abu Ayub al-Ansari, a companion of the Prophet, was buried. The site was discovered by Mehmed II, who built a mausoleum on top of it. Sultans after him went there on the ascension. Along the way, there was a procession where people could see their new sultan. For many sultans, it was there that the sword girding ceremony took place, so it can be said that it was sort of the Ottoman Westminster Abbey. In addition to the Ayub Sultan Mosque, they also visited the tombs of some of the previous sultans. Some sultans only visited the tombs of Mehmed II, though. The Baya, the foundation of power in Islam, remained a part of the Ottoman succession. At the height of Ottoman power, it took place at the Babusade, or the Gate of Felicity, of the Topkapi Palace, where officials gathered and paid homage to the new sultan. Sultan Abdulhamid II, of the Armenian genocide fame, put a special emphasis on the Baya as a way to connect himself to the ancient Islamic tradition. Of course, there was also the ceremonial killing of the brothers, but that was usually before the coronation. The sword girding ceremony was the most important part of the whole affair, and it was forbidden for non-Muslims to see it. However, for the last two sultans, that wasn't the case. Sultan Mehmed V ascended to the throne on May 10, 1909. He allowed non-Muslims and even representatives of some of the faiths in the Ottoman Empire to be present. New York Times even wrote a detailed description of the event. After him, his successor, Mehmed VI, even allowed filming of the ceremony. Of course, there are a few groups around today that still claim the caliphate that I cannot talk about on YouTube, and they do still have the tradition of the Baya, but again, it's mostly just a symbolic gesture and power is actually commanded through guns and bodies. The Baya has also been used by various Sufi orders to choose a leader or pledge allegiance to a spiritual guide. The tradition can be said to have mostly died out and is only used as a cheap trick to get easy points with some of the most religious Muslims. It is no longer the promise of mutual support and the symbol of humility and simplicity that it was in the olden days. It is now just an empty gesture. See you next time. Don't forget to subscribe and press the bell icon. On the screen right now, you can see the names and tiers of the patrons. You can join them by pledging a dollar or more to support the channel. Thank you for watching.